This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You might know the legend of Old Norse King Canute. He had his throne brought down to the sea, sat down, and ordered the tide to hold back. Tide rolled in, of course, soaking his royal robes and proving that even mighty kings are powerless to command the ocean. The lesson seems to have held until this year, when the North Carolina Senate passed a bill that would limit the scientific data that can be used to predict rising sea levels. The House defeated the bill last night, but it went to a conference committee, so some version of that bill might yet become law. The legislation was prompted by a report by the scientists at the North Carolina Coastal Resource Commission. The study found that sea level will rise by almost a meter by the year 2100. They're using current data that includes measurable effects of global warming. The bill passed by the Republican-led Senate would outlaw current data and require projections to be based on historical figures. In other words, look at what's happened over the last 100 years and then project those figures over the next 100. And by that measure, it will only rise 8 inches by 2100. Comedian Stephen Colbert grasped the logic immediately.
I think we should start applying this method to even more things that we don't want to happen. For example, I don't want to die. But the actuaries at my insurance company are convinced that it will happen sometime in the next 50 years. However, if we consider only historical data, I've been alive my entire life. Therefore, I always will be. And
Rob Young is one of the geologists on the science panel of the North Carolina Coastal Resource Commission, so he's partially responsible for the report that predicts a 39-inch rise in sea level. He's also the director for program of study developed shorelines and a professor of coastal geology at Western Carolina University. Rob Young, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Tell me more about what this draft study showed and what you found.
Well, 2 years ago, we were asked by the Coastal Resources Commission to chime in on what the science showed that the rate of sea level rise might be for the future, specifically by the year 2100. And we conducted a very thorough review of all the peer-reviewed scientific literature and the statements released by various scientific academies and organizations around the globe to come up with a planning number for the rate of sea level rise for the future. And that recommended number was about a meter, 39 inches. This is a number that has been used by a number of different states. Some states have even had expert panels that chose higher numbers. And this is, a number that was designed to be used for planning purposes, how we should think about vulnerable coastal areas for the future, particularly for major infrastructure projects. And, we didn't think that it was particularly controversial.
Well, I want to underscore that point you make, that your findings weren't out of line with any of the findings or most of the findings up and down the coast. Everybody's science is turning up pretty close to the same number.
That's correct. There's a real consensus amongst the different expert panels that states and other localities have put together to develop their own planning numbers and planning targets for sea level rise. And they all seem to be centering around a meter, 39 inches of sea level rise.
So when you talk about planning for what? How does this information help you, knowing how things are going to rise, how the ocean levels will rise over the next 100 years or so? What do you do?
It's important to keep in mind that sea level has been rising for the last couple of 100 years. We know this. Nobody's questioning whether sea level has in fact risen in the past and whether it's continuing to rise today. The question is whether it will rise faster in the future or not. And planning is important for dealing with risk on the coast. We have serious hurricane impacts in eastern North Carolina. We fund coastal protection projects like beach nourishment, where we pump sand on the beach. And we have continued development of the coastal zone. And in order to limit the amount of risk, both to lives and property, and to make sure that the rest of us North Carolinians who don't live on the coast, to make sure that we're not stuck with big tax bills taking care of irresponsible development on the coast, you know, we need to have some sort of a perspective on which portions of the coast will be vulnerable to sea level rise over the future. And you know, the most other important point is that none of the areas that are currently at risk to erosion and storms, none of that's going to get any better in the future because of rising sea level. Those problems are only going to get worse. And so, you know, that makes it imperative to deal with those issues sooner rather than later.
It's kind of interesting because if I went with the lower levels, it might promote some kind of development. People could get entrenched. When the disaster hits, then, as you suggest, we're all on the hook. First of all of our insurance goes up all over the state, but also there might be some intervention to make up for the loss. And if we weren't prepared for that, the whole state might end up paying more.
That's right. And you know, nobody's suggesting we send the stormtroopers to the coast and evacuate everybody east of Raleigh. And, I think there have been a lot of scare tactics used to suggest that this somehow means that it's the end to the coastal economy. There are select areas of the coast that are extremely low elevation that are currently experiencing regular flooding and storm impacts. And developing a policy that looks forward and anticipates that those problems are only going to get worse in the future, and that they may get worse at an accelerating rate is sensible risk management and sensible planning. There's nothing hysterical about this.
Tell us what's wrong with the historical projections, or maybe the other way to ask the question is, if you go back and use history as a measure, then we're looking at an 8-inch rise over the next 100 years. You suggest it's been going on, so we'll get some kind of a rise. Otherwise, 39 inches, what's the difference? What did you factor in that a historical data set wouldn't?
Well, if you look at the rate of rise over the last 100 years, what's not included in there is some of the large-scale impacts of global warming that the vast majority of the scientific community expect to occur during the next 100 years. And that's primarily changes to the great ice sheets like Greenland and Antarctica, and increased rate of melting of those ice sheets and calving when large sections of the glaciers break off. So, you know, what's expected in the future is a significant change in large-scale climate dynamics. And, you know, I might point out that this is expected, you know, whether you believe that humans are playing a major role in climate change or not. You know, we're going down that road right now. And so planning for these eventualities is just a sensible thing to do.
This report, this draft report, quickly became political, and this legislation apparently generated because of it. Were you surprised at that?
I'd say that the science panel was very surprised. You know, once again, we didn't think that we had produced a particularly controversial document, especially if you put it in the context of what every other major scientific organization has reported and what other state expert panels have reported. I mean, if you don't like the number that we produced in our report, then you must not like the National Academy of Sciences or the Geological Society of America or the American Geophysical Union. I mean, the only way that you can ignore the peer-reviewed report that we produced is to elect to ignore all the major scientific organizations in our country.
Well, it's interesting you use that word because that is another choice. One choice would be to ignore the data and move forward in your planning as though it didn't happen. It's quite another to say you may not look at those numbers. They may not be factored in.
And I think, you know, Frank, you're correct there that the biggest problem that we had with what the Senate was trying to do was that not only were they saying, you know, we don't really think we should be doing too much about sea level rise right now, but the bill included a completely different methodology for predicting the rate of sea level rise in the future than any other scientific organization has used or would use. And we have no idea where that language or where that methodology came from, you know, or who vetted it, or whose wording that was. And so in our mind, it was it's a totally different issue to say, you know what, we don't really want to do anything about sea level rise right now.
I think it comes from the National Academy of things we probably think are already true, more or less. that academy. Yeah. And I've actually seen the documents. So now there's another provision in this, which is pretty interesting that we haven't talked about. And that also says in the Senate bill, and remember, the House defeated the bill. It's in conference as we speak, and we don't know what's going to happen to it. But in the Senate passed bill, local communities can't plan around sea level rise. It has to be left to the state.
I think that basically what it said was that the local communities could only use the planning numbers that were approved by the Coastal Resources Commission and the Division of Coastal Management, and then the bill stipulated exactly how that would happen. So, you know, a city like Wilmington, North Carolina, for example, which is concerned about rising sea level, they could not plan for a meter of sea level rise. They would be restricted to planning for the number that was mandated by that Senate bill. And, it's pretty strange that this particular legislature would be trying to take away that kind of local control.
Rob, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Rob Young, director of the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines. He's also a professor of coastal geology at Western Carolina University. Just ahead, what's this? The host of another public radio show will join us on this program. And I will talk with him. We're going to talk to Al Letson. He is the host and producer of State of the Reunion. He's going to tell a story at the Moth, and we'll get a preview on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.